I think that might be an interesting way of looking at how discourses around anxiety are created, how they are constructed. And it does, actually, if we're teaching migration history, we also need to, I don't know, I think there is a place for policy. It might be quite dry, but they do need to understand the context. It's like with the Windrush thing, you know, Olusegun did a really great program, but this wasn't a sudden thing. This was a policy in the making. This was happening over decades. And unless we kind of get that, then we understand the context in which this discourse of anxiety is created and how politicians are sometimes responding, but also sometimes leading or fueling a particular discourse. And it makes me think about issues of language, because actually, and I think teachers need to take account of this, this unproblematic use of pronouns like we, and what do we actually mean when we use those sorts of words when we're teaching particularly a topic like this, but I would say any topic. But also because you say that the importance of labeling reflects the power politics that are actually at play. Who's got the power to name somebody an asylum seeker, an economic migrant? I just wonder if you both could just say a little bit about the language.
Yeah, well, I think the labelling is really important. Part of it is a little bit technical and won't necessarily be fascinating to the students, but is really important. You know, understand some legal terms. If we take the word alien, which, you know, if you were in America, it would be a common usage. But today, you know, you say alien and people think of outer space figures and so on. But that's only last 20, 30, 40 years that that's had that meaning. Look at its background, that when it was used in the 1900s, on one level, it's a neutral term. It just means someone not born in the British Empire. But on another level, it's a term of abuse, the otherness of the alien and all the things associated with it. So even with the legal definitions, there are sort of cultural meanings which are very different. But I think some of the technical stuff, which organisations like the Refugee Council have got very good resources of just saying, this is what this term this means, this is what this term means. So the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker, for example, could be explained. And it's not straightforward, but it can be grasped. And also when the term refugee comes into use, why it may have more positive connotations than some other terms. So if we take the 1900s debate, those supporting those coming from Eastern Europe regarded them as refugees or Jewish refugees. Those that want to stop them, they're unwanted aliens. And so, you know, again, very different perspective. And we've got a new term, or relatively new term, which is that of illegal immigrant. And that, you know, is very recent, really. Some start in 1920s, but really not till the 1930s that we get this idea of putting immigrant and illegal in the same phrase. And that then gets shortened to illegals. And I've been sort of every couple of years done a sort of Google check, which is not particularly accurate, but just the millions and millions of hits if you put illegal immigrant or just illegals into a search. And that's become sort of common usage. And it's almost always abusive. You know, as Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor, Auschwitz survivor, sort of put it, no human is illegal. Some of the things they do may be illegal, but no human by being a human is illegal. But we've sort of made a certain category of people illegal, and how that has changed. So it does bring in the complicated laws that we have. But I think for people to, you know, understand that it wasn't really until 1951 there was sort of international protection of this individual, the refugee, but that all of the terms have issues. So that migrant is used by the BBC because it's neutral, but in certain hands, migrant is not neutral. So again, it gets students to think about usage, who is using these terms. So we can look at the technical meanings of the terms, their origins, their bureaucratic use, the importance of it, and how, you know, it's the same people we can regard in different ways. So Priti Patel very recently is saying that if some Afghani refugees came by boat across the channel, then they would be treated in the same way that she wants to treat the others, and no doubt sent to some remote island that she's discovered. But if they come through the official British route, i.e. they're good migrants, then they'll be let in. So, you know, the example recently of trying to let unaccompanied children in through work of Dubs, a former kinder transport refugee, just hundreds have come in over a long period. So these official schemes are very, very hard to get into. And again, I think students might think of what paper walls and barriers alongside the increasing physical walls have we created, and the terminology goes along with that. So these terms are never neutral.
I'm learning a lot just by listening to Tony. It's fantastic. I was just thinking, in addition to what Tony was saying about these terms, that they are all, the meaning changes depending on when and who is using them and so on, but nevertheless teachers are going to have to decide what terms they are going to use when they're teaching. So I guess what teachers need to do is have a kind of open agreement with their students that we will use these terms, and this is what we mean collectively by these terms, but we will look at how the meanings of those terms have shifted and changed over time. The other thing that occurred to me, Jason, was your point about thinking about policies. And it seems to me that what, in historical thinking terms, what we're talking about here is thinking about the sort of changes and continuities of official sort of policy. And that's kind of the sort of horizontal direction of a unit, for example, but kind of vertically then you're looking at specific moments and the similarity and differences within those moments. So the policy might say this at this point, but the reality was this. So that we're constantly not only looking at shifts across time, but we're looking at the nuances within each period. And, you know, we're trying to avoid this notion that the experience of this migrant group was this, whereas the experience of this migrant group was this. And that's not what we want to do. And it's similarly in terms of the British response to, you know, migrants coming into Britain, that it may look on one level in terms of the policy that it's a rather negative response. But actually, there will be examples at that time of a more open, warm, welcoming response. And I mean, it's just all the time, it's about chipping away at generalizations. That's what I feel I do constantly in history lessons, is just chip away at generalizations and help kids to see the nuances and the complexities.